Morning. As we prepare to hear these words from James 3, verses 1 through 12, I hope before we hear them, we can reflect for just a moment on the power of words. Words are little things that we often think have no power until we find out the hard way that they do. Words are the beginning of change. Words are the beginning of revolutions. Words are the beginning of friendships. Words are the end of friendships. They have the power to shape our very existence. Though small, they have the potential to shape our lives and the lives of others in profound ways. The words we use, the words we hear, really do have power. The moment that we believe and lie to ourselves that words have no real power is the moment that we've already accepted that we are just passengers along a ride. Words are perhaps the greatest power that has ever existed beyond our God. In fact, our God existed as word. This is the backdrop behind James 3, 1 through 12. Like a tiny spark that can ignite a great fire, our speech can either build up or tear down, bless or curse. In this world, words often cause division and harm. We pop popcorn, we turn on the TV, we watch debates to see how words can harm, how they can divide. James urges us to consider the weight of what we say. This passage calls us to pursue wisdom and self-control, using our words not for destruction, but to heal, to encourage. As we listen, let's open our hearts to this message of taming the tongue and consider how our words can better reflect the love of God. The word of the Lord from James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters. For you know that we who teach will face stricter judgment. For all of us make many mistakes. Anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is mature, able to keep the whole body in check with a bridle. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole bodies. Or look at ships. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, yet they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great exploits. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire, and the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of life, and is itself set on fire by hell. For every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature could be tamed and has been tamed by humans. But no one can tame the tongue, a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse people made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth comes a blessing and a cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives, or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh. James 3 opens with a sobering warning. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. One of my all-time favorite preachers said that only a fool could wake up on a Sunday morning, look in the mirror, and said, I should preach today. This sets the tone for this deeper message from James, this immense power of the tongue. James uses vivid imagery to illustrate how such a small part of the body can cause great harm, comparing the tongue to a bit in a horse's mouth, the rudder of a ship, small yet capable of controlling the entire direction of something much larger. Even more striking is his description of the tongue as a fire. this small spark that can set an entire forest ablaze. The problem that James points out is the inconsistency of the tongue. With it, we both bless God and curse those who are made in God's likeness. This duplicity reveals a fundamental issue in the human heart, our inability to fully control our speech. James acknowledges the challenge of taming the tongue, stating that no human being can do it alone. Theologically, this points to the brokenness within us. Our words often reveal a disconnect between our faith and our actions. We may desire to speak well, but in moments of anger, frustration, carelessness, that's when our words hurt, divide, they betray our best of intentions. The tongue, when left unchecked, can lead to destruction. It damages relationships. It reflects a lack of spiritual maturity. So the issue that James addresses with this tongue's destructive power, this potential, is as relevant today as it was in his time. By my calculations, this hasn't changed over the years. A lot of things have changed over the years. We have electricity in our churches now. We can worship in air conditioning when it works. James's church didn't have those problems. They didn't have to worry about HVAC contracts or any of those things, for better or worse. Some things change. This is one of those things that hasn't. Words seem to, if anything, flow faster and more freely than ever. Especially with the rise of social media and instant communication and an absolute lack of accountability for what you say online. The tongue's reach has expanded, no longer confined to personal conversations. Our words now have the power to affect large audiences in an instant. With this increased exposure comes a greater opportunity for harm. The old classics like gossip and harsh criticisms, divisive language, that seems to be what often dominates our interactions now. Perhaps at one point in history that was not the norm, but now it's so hard to find positive words, leaving a trail of broken relationships and deep wounds. In public discourse, we see words used as weapons to degrade, to shame, to humiliate. That's true of all of us. It's true of politicians. It's true of media figures. It's true of you and me every time we log on to pick your social media platform of choice. It is just too easy for people to engage in heated rhetoric, fueling division and animosity, and we love it. We absolutely enjoy it. We revel in it. We pay to see it. This cultural climate of verbal aggression, it just encourages believers to participate or at least passively accept such destructive speech. Even if you say, I'm above that and I will not engage in that, you still scroll through it. It's still part of your world. In families, workplaces, communities, unkind words have led to lasting damage, reinforcing resentment, creating walls between people. We are just too careless with our speech, using words thoughtlessly, only to realize later the pain they've caused. And then we cheapen good quality words like, I'm sorry, until they have no meaning anymore. In moments of anger, frustration, we let hurtful comments fly, forgetting the power our words hold. Our desire for quick replies or witty comebacks can cause us to overlook the real damage being done. So much pain hides behind the mask of sarcasm. Like the people James addresses, we still struggle to tame our tongues. And the impact of this struggle is evident in all of the fractured relationships, the broken trust, the communities that have been torn apart by thoughtless or, God forbid, thoughtful words. And despite the challenges that James presents regarding the tongue, there still is somewhere buried in this gloomy text some grace, pointing to the possibility of some kind of transformation. Yes, it's true, human effort alone has failed and cannot ever tame the tongue. But God provides wisdom to guide our speech. He at least is giving us what we need to make an effort to tame the tongue. In the verses immediately following our passage, spoilers for next week, James 3, verses 13 through 18, he speaks of a wisdom that is pure, peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits. This wisdom, which comes from God, it directs our speech. It allows us to use our words not for destruction, but for peace, for healing. Words can do that. Perhaps it's been so long since we've seen it, but they can do that. When we seek God's wisdom, our words reflect God's character. They become gentle and merciful. Our words become life-giving. Isaiah 50 said the exact same thing. It adds another layer of grace to this theme of taming the tongue. Isaiah 50 is famous for being part of what we call the suffering servant passage of Isaiah. This is something in Isaiah that seems to foretell or reflect the very character and story of Jesus, this servant of the Lord, who speaks words that sustain the weary. This servant, empowered by God, uses words not to tear down, but to strengthen and encourage those in need. It foreshadows Jesus, whose words of truth and grace have the power to transform lives. In Mark 8, 27 through 38, we see the power of words. When Jesus asks his disciples, "Who do you say I am?" Peter's response is, "You are the Messiah." It shows the power of rightly spoken words. Peter's declaration is a blessing. It affirms the true identity of Christ. It's how we see words when guided by divine wisdom have the power to reveal truth. As if truth is something that any of us could define without arguing about it anymore. Words have the power to bless, to bring life. Through God's grace, our speech can be transformed. If we can seek God's wisdom, our tongues can be tamed. Our words can reflect God's love, God's peace, God's truth. In our world, where destructive speech often prevails, the grace of God offers the power to transform how we use our words. Just as James describes the possibility of receiving wisdom from above, we too can learn to speak with intentionality, using our words to build up rather than to tear down. Through the work of the Holy Spirit, we are invited to let our speech reflect the character of Christ, marked by a gentleness, a mercy, peace. For you and me, for us believers, this transformation is not only possible, it's absolutely essential. We are called to be ambassadors of Christ, to represent God's love in our interactions with others. So, where harsh words and divisive rhetoric are common, Christians can stand out by speaking words of kindness, patience, truth. Whether that's in a personal conversation or public spaces, our speech can become a tool for healing, for reconciliation. Practically, this looks like being more mindful before we speak. It means asking ourselves if our words build up or tear down. Will our words reflect the grace and love of God? It may involve apologizing for words that have been spoken in anger already, or seeking forgiveness for careless remarks. And it can also mean offering encouragement, speaking truth with love, using our words to comfort the weary. Ultimately, this grace of God empowers us to tame our tongues. So as we grow in wisdom and self-control, we can reflect God's character through our words, becoming agents of peace, reconciliation, and healing in a broken world. And I think more often than not, what that actually looks like is just not using any words at all. Perhaps silence is the best way to use our words wisely. Some examples. Sometimes the internet does produce wholesome things. They're harder to find, but they're there. I saw one such wholesome thing about 2 weeks ago. About 2 weeks ago, I saw a video of somebody's Ring doorbell camera capturing what's been collected and collated as a montage of delivery drivers breaking packages. So these delivery drivers are throwing the packages at the door or intentionally like smashing them, and in one case, stepping on the package before they left it on the front porch. And these people, the owner of the doorbell camera, now have a choice to make, don't they? Many of you have probably already come to the conclusion that the next obvious course of action would be to report the delivery drivers. Maybe get new ones. Maybe get rid of these guys and get some different ones. I don't know why these particular delivery drivers seem to be so angry with this particular house. Perhaps they have a good reason. I don't know what it is. But what I found truly interesting about this entire situation is the owner of the doorbell camera decided not to report any of the drivers, not to have any sort of confrontation with the drivers, but instead take sympathy on these drivers. To come to the not-so-obvious assumption that perhaps these drivers need something that brings them into a better place in life. So they did something little. They set up a cooler full of drinks and snacks for the delivery drivers who come to their house. And wouldn't you know that one small little bitty act of kindness with no words spoken completely reconciled and rectified this entire situation of angry delivery drivers. Fast forward about a week. A certain 8-year-old, who I will remain nameless, though I happen to know on a daily basis, comes home from school and says to me that someone called her a dummy on the playground. The particular person who has done the name calling has done this before to many other 8-year-olds, now 9-year-olds, and it was no surprise to anyone. The 8-year-old that's now a 9-year-old in question who has been called a dummy didn't even think about it, didn't bother her. She just went on about her day and moved on. We've done some thinking about it, this 9-year-old and I, and it seems to me that we don't understand what causes this other child to lash out like this. We could confront the family. I happen to have the phone number of the parent in question. I could cause this confrontation. We could even probably have a school-mediated confrontation. We could probably even do this with the principal and the teacher, and it could be a whole ordeal, and we could demand justice for the name-calling. All of that's within reasonable requesting. But instead, we're going to try to learn something from our delivery drivers and repay some hateful words with some kindness. That's not the natural inclination, is it? We love a good confrontation. We love to be wronged, because if we are wronged, then we get to stand on moral high ground, and we love to stand on moral high grounds. The view from moral high ground is so much better from down below. But what my daughter chooses to do in this moment matters. And she has already chosen on her own, before I said anything, not to return words of unkindness with words of unkindness. And she has decided that she needs to find a way to encourage this child who clearly needs some kindness in her life too. And it just makes me wonder, if all the adults wandering around in this world could choose the same course of action from time to time, how much more proud I would be to live in this world. Because I gotta tell you, I'm really proud of a 9-year-old who's choosing to better the life of someone who called her a name rather than to call her names back or to get her in trouble. I'd be a whole lot more proud of a bunch of adults if they could do the same thing. It's not easier for us to do it. For us adults, I think we've lost that inclination, that ability to assume the best in people. But it's there, isn't it? The possibility. The possibility still exists for us to choose the same course of action, to face rudeness with something that's kind. What would that look like? I imagine it would look a bit like a Jewish teacher being crucified, and while he's being crucified, forgiving those who are crucifying him. Easy? No. Better? Yes. James, perhaps, is the only one here who has the moral high ground on this topic. As we prepare to come to this table, we reflect on the power of words. God's word spoken to us through Christ, the word made flesh, the word crucified, and that word, while being crucified, became a word of life, forgiveness, hope for the others being crucified. In Jesus, we see the perfect example of what words can do, how they can bring life, how they can heal, how they can bring hope. His words of forgiveness, his words of compassion and truth have the power to transform us from the inside out, and if they didn't, you wouldn't be sitting here listening to me ramble on. As we partake in communion, we remember not only Christ and his sacrifice, but also his invitation to live in a way that reflects his love. Just as Jesus used his words to build up and to heal, we are called to speak words of life, grace, peace. So let us approach this meal with gratitude, asking God to transform our hearts and our speech so that in all we say and in all that we do, we may reflect his love in all things, in all places. Let's stand and sing.